Let's start it off with this salvo that Musia Lakota from COPE fired in Parliament this week.
I do want to say to the President today, I was a bit puzzled that you introduced Roosevelt in all of that you spoke about. I'd like to say we must come back to South Africa because I was never in the United States to struggle. We struggled here. And I want to say, I do want to say to you, Mr. President, that we were invited on a trip of struggle by the preeminent leader of the students of our time, the late Steve Biko, who said to us that we must fight the struggle, and said that, and I quote, in case of danger or living conditions that threaten human life, we must accept life for what it is or not at all. It did not take very long, 2 years or so, because that was around 72. In about 1974, we went into detention, among others. And in the course of that, we had to respond to this challenge. And I want to say to you, you invited me last week. We had to respond to that challenge. Your invitation last week was late. The challenge we had to respond to was that time. And you, with us in detention, when it was difficult, you wrote to the special branch that we put communist ideas in your head. In doing so, you condemned us to the special branch. And I say, I say this to you.
Order.
Because the special branch rewarded you, as they always reward their victims, and they send you home. And we headed to Robben Island. You should have responded. This invitation that you are issuing on Friday, you should have issued it then. We should have traveled together to the island to serve years for the struggle of our people. I will not join you in the trip that you are suggesting. I will not join you because you made your choice then.
There's a point of order. Honorable Lekota, please take your seat.
Honorable Lekota. This issue of selling out is very important.
Honorable Lekota, please continue with... You must please watch your clock.
Well, the only point I wanted to make was that that was the time the choices were made. I made my choice to go down with our people. You made your choice to go with them. Now you are inviting us to join you in the corruption of Bosasa, in the corruption of all of these things you've been doing with the others. I'm sorry, sir. I will stay with the people in Khayelitsha, in Chiawelo and Soweto and so on. The day we get out of there, it will not be to go to the flesh path of Egypt. It will be to go with our people when freedom is there for everybody. I thank you. I'm grateful you are a billionaire. Keep the billionaires and thank you for them. But we are not going to be part with you. I'm not joining that trip. Thank you, sir. If you are...
So those are obviously the comments that set off this firestorm, and also needs to be seen in the context of electioneering. But I want a bit of historical perspective to this, as well as some contemporary political commentary. And it's my great pleasure once again to welcome to the show Mr. Umar Pacha. He's a South African documentary photographer, artist, political and trade union activist, and a historian. Also the founder of South African History Online, which is South Africa's largest history website. Mr. Pacha, assalamu alaikum. Thank you for your time.
Walaikum salam, and thank you for inviting me.
It's a pleasure, Mr. Abacha. I was just, curious about the developments of this week, and I just sat back for a moment and said, last week many people were besides a few opposition parties who perhaps just needed to show that they are the opposition and object to some the delivery of the President's State of the Nation address, but wide range of sentiments actually congratulated the President, and there was a sense of optimism again after he gave his very clear State of the Nation address. And a week later, it seems as if we're living in a different country. There's insults flying left, right, and center. There's the Eskom crisis. How do the wheels turn so quickly in South African politics?
Well, in politics, everywhere in the world, when there is contestation between parties and class or race or religious contestations, people say things and events move at such a pace. People say things or events bring out people into the streets. And at the moment we are going through one of the most severe crises this country has faced since 1990. And in this crisis, we are also 2 months away from elections, and the opposition is feeling at the moment, let me put it this way, they're feeling on the back foot, because when Zuma was there, he was a very easy target. And now with Ramaphosa and Ramaphosa's ability to swing public opinion to his side, I think some of the opposition's parties are feeling very threatened, because they might just disappear in the next elections.
But does this kind of crisis, Mr. Bacha, also not expose Mr. Ramaphosa's very soft underbelly, if you'd like? The fact that people can easily fall back on some kinds of criticism against him, be it that he's not a man of the people, he's very close to business, he's very close to foreign interests, he's a billionaire, people would use that against him. And, people can also, as we've seen this week, try to dig up stories or allegations from the past. So, and we also have the elephant in the room, which is a kind of split ANC. So does this, time and time again, not show the president's vulnerability?
Well, the president is vulnerable because his party, the ANC, has brought us to this point in our history, and he knows that, and the ANC knows that the 9 years under Zuma was one of the worst things that could happen to the party and to the country. So he is on his back foot. He has to deliver. There's panic within the ANC because they themselves are very divided. And so a number of factors have come into play. But I think that Tera Lokoto's input in the State of the Nation address is actually hitting rock bottom, because he makes allegations which turned out to be totally untrue. And with no substantial evidence on his part to back it. I know many of the people who, most of the people who were with terror in that period who were arrested. And, there were others in that group who were arrested, who were not charged, who turned out to be people working for the state. But Ramaphosa, it's very clear, and he actually made out, he made his argument that, he said no. And what also backs up his argument was that after this period, his father, who was a policeman, also resigned from the police force. Now, if his father, if Ramaphosa was a police spy, his father would remain there. But no, I think this is a scurrilous accusation being made by Lokota, and it actually doesn't, he doesn't bear him any really good, because he has a good track record, but he's losing it. You know, his position with Palestine to the Israelis, his position with the right-wing Afrikaner organization, all go to show that there's something wrong in his party, or something wrong with him, that he is now aligning himself with right-wingers.
And that brings me to another question here, particularly with Mr. Lokota. I'll have to come back to Ramaphosa, and I'll have to come back to this issue of sellouts and spies and why this always ignites a firestorm. But with regard to Mr. Lokota, and anybody else for that matter, we always talk a lot about selling out in the past. I want to pose the question or reframe the argument. Can we not also make a counter-argument to say that people are selling out in the present, whether it is by betraying apartheid, the apartheid struggle ideals, whether it is by corruption? Why are the sins of the past always so seen as so grave, but the sins of the present sometimes are, people get off very lightly for them?
Well, that is a question that we all would like to find answers to, it because human society and politics in particular is so incredibly complex. And in the present era, the complexity is made sharper by the social media and events. Are interpreted on as they emerge and as they unfold, people making comments, sometimes feeding false information. So, there's always, everyone's on tenterhooks, everyone's responding, and we're not reflecting, we're not thinking through and saying, look, is what being said correct? Should we check? We're throwing all of that out of the window. And in particular at the moment in this country, we are using the past to make score points against your opponents. And as I said earlier, the smaller parties like COPE have actually lost it. They came a very solid support, and over the years it's just been eroded. Many of the COPE members are moving all back to the ANC, and so I think Lokota is finding himself in a very vulnerable situation. But notwithstanding that, his response to the Sonas speech, when I listen to it now, just now when you played it, is absolutely out of context. It looks like the president had invited him, together with other opposition party members, to meet and to chat and to try and find some common ground, which any good president should do. And Lokota's response was a very vitriolic one, a very vicious one. So one asks, what is it? What purpose is it serving his party and the country as a whole? At the moment, I would have thought that the opposition parties would think about the country and would sort of, notwithstanding going into election mode, would say, but look, Ramaphosa, as opposed to Zuma, is a much better president, and the country is going through a crisis. We should find common grounds with the president. We might not find common grounds with the ANC, but we'll find common grounds with the president. And that it seems like that partly happened with the DA and EFF at the debate. But Ramaphosa's, Tera Lakota's response was totally uncalled for, totally undiplomatic and apolitical.
And when you have to speculate, then what purpose does this particular response serve? Because I think nobody is expecting anything spectacular from COPE at the polls, and a statement like this, simply whatever kind of controversy it ignites, it's not going to translate into votes for COPE. So what is there for Lakota to gain by saying this?
Well, he just was shooting from the hip, not thinking through. And, you know, sometimes that happens in the heat of the moment. And in politics, when you do that in front of the entire country at the most important debate of the year, he comes across as somebody you can't trust.
Let's go back to these allegations about apartheid spying, apartheid sellouts, etc. The question I have, firstly, is regardless of whether it's true or not, and from your side and your surveying of the evidence, you say that that there's not an ounce of truth in this. That's from your particular vantage point. Other people are still saying, you know, regardless of whether this is electioneering or not, why do we not get clearer answers on such particular matters and get more details so it can be buried conclusively and not linger? But regardless of whether it's fact or not, Mr. Bacha, is there not a danger that this just has ignited a firestorm, and in South Africa or in politics, wherever it may be around the world, perceptions rather than facts seem to be mattering more nowadays?
Yes, but, you know, I think that if the people were watching SONA, that debate would, and then the president's response would clearly be on his side, because he was very, very clear about what happened. And, you know, people have been checking through the records of the trial, and also the police, archives, and there is no such letter in that trial that come out to say that Ramaphosa wrote a letter. You never write a letter; you write a statement. There's nothing of that sort in that trial. And you know, they were, as I was saying, I knew most of those people who were on that trial. Some of them are very close friends of mine, and some of them, it now appears, were working for the security police, who had turned during the course of the trial because of torture or and in most cases it was torture and or pressure, family pressure, and so you can't hold that against people, because did they come and give evidence which led to them going to prison, or did they just make a statement and then they were let off? And so in the trust of the political struggle, we've had so many people who had to quote unquote sell out because they broke under interrogation and gave evidence, not in court, but provided the security police with evidence. And there was a rule. There was also a rule. You know, the line between what could be used in court and what was said in interrogation is a very thin line, because all of us were trained that after 48 hours, if people are arrested, you know, you wait for 48 hours, you try and, you know, be alert and try and, you know, not make any statement so that your fellow comrades are able to leave the country or escape. Things like that. So people were trained to then give information. Sometimes it wasn't very serious information, But they made a statement. Sometimes those statements were used in court, and other times they were not. And people were released. So now you can't then to draw a line to say this particular person, because he made a statement, he was a sellout. And I think that's a very dangerous situation to put yourself in, because you and I don't understand what people go through in interrogation, under interrogation or detention.
And I guess also part of this is that the security establishment at that time in the apartheid regime actually would gain by, you know, placing these suspicions in the minds of other comrades to try and divide the movement. So there were, you know, certain sort of absolutely information fabricated against fellow comrades.
Absolutely. You know, this morning's paper, there's an article in the Sunday Times about the death of Ben Langa. And Ben Langa's case is a very interesting one. Ben Langa was a member of the underground, and he was assassinated by his own comrades, who were fed information by the security police to say that Langa was a police spy, and then this information was sent through to Swaziland. And the guy in Swaziland who was in charge of the ANC operations there turned out to be a police informer himself. And he then asked people to go back into the country and, you know, assassinate Ben. Now, the security police played those games where they, you know, they fed people information. And on the basis of that information, people were assassinated, or, you know, or just disappeared, you know, and it caused an enormous amount of havoc then, and now also in as we've seen in this particular incident. But I think that it's events of overtaking this event this year. What happened, what Lakota is saying, and the countries move on to now, next week, this, you know, our budget speech. Again, there will be controversies around that. And you can continue up to election time, right up to the day of the election. You will see, you know, claims and counterclaims from all sides. And so one has to be very cautious and, you know, and ask ourselves, look very carefully at what is happening, mm-hmm. and not be waylaid. We have to look at what the political party's manifesto is, what is their track record. And you know, at the moment, lots of people are under enormous, you know, they are actually saying, we like Ramaphosa, we don't like the party. Mm-hmm. We will vote for him, not the party. And, you know, and there's an argument that if more people vote for the ANC, it will strengthen Ramaphosa's hands in making changes in the country and in his party. And that's a moot point. Again, there's no evidence to back that up, that would be the case, but people are believing that, and that's now becoming part of the myth that has been sort of perpetuated by a whole range of people, that a vote for Ramaphosa is a vote to strengthen his hand in the ANC. And that might be true, but that might also be just, again, a ploy being used.
Yeah, obviously there's a minefield ahead of us, and there's some argument that it could strengthen Ramaphosa. There's another argument that it could also strengthen strengthened ANC could also give ascendancy to the opposing components of the ANC to Ramaphosa. But we don't have time to go into all of that, but I thank you so much for giving us, I think, a valuable historical perspective, particularly regarding sellouts, particularly regarding or allegations of sellouts, spying in the apartheid era. There's a lot more to talk about this, but I thank you so much for your time, Mr. Bacha, this evening. Shukran and assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.